Hey everyone, it's Jack, and this podcast that you're about to hear, it's one of those mini interviews stitched together episodes where it's an assembly of different interviews I did at a convention. And in this case, it was PlatypusCon here in Juneau, Alaska in 2019. Well, I guess our 2019 PlatypusCon. That was kind of self-explanatory, but whatever. Why is it called PlatypusCon? I have no idea. We have no platypi indigenous to this region. As far as I can tell, we have moose, we have eagles, we have beavers. We do not have platypuses. But nonetheless, it is called PlatypusCon, and it's an awesome convention. I implore you to come check it out sometime. If not, if you're not going to make it up, then you owe it to yourself and you owe it to me to watch the videos associated with these interviews, which you can find on our YouTube channel, which, by the way, we have this awesome custom YouTube slug now. That's youtube.com/thecardboardherald. So yeah, check all that out. But in the meantime, here are some interviews that I did at PlatypusCon. One is with a board member of Platypus Gaming Group. One is with an Alaskan born and raised game designer, Michael Dunsmore of Dunsmore Games. You should check out his upcoming game, We Need to Talk, which is coming out under Smirk and Dagger, or I guess their imprint, Smirk and Laughter, and a couple people exhibiting at the con in different capacities. So yeah, that's it. You know, it's kind of the normal drill. I'll be back to doing normal episodes with next week, so look forward to that, and I'll continue doing con coverage as I go to conventions. Thanks for listening. Here's the show. Hey everyone, and welcome back to more of the Cardboard Herald's coverage of our local hometown convention, PlatypusCon 2019 at Centennial Hall here in Juneau, Alaska. I have with me John Foster, the volunteer coordinator and board member for PlatypusCon. How's the con going, man?
Fantastic so far.
So far. What could go wrong? What could go awry that you're looking out for, that you're being ever so vigilant for?
Absolutely nothing. Sunday's our busy day, though, surprisingly. It picks up after the Catan tournament on Saturday, and I say so far because it's not over yet.
Well, I know that it has been really exciting over here in the demo area, which is where the Cardboard Herald is adjacent to, and it sounds like there are a lot of great games that are getting demoed. What seems to be the hotness for everyone?
Short and sweet seems to be the order of the day. We've got games like War Chest. We've got games like Azul. You know, a lot of these drop-in games where you can teach them in 5 minutes and play them in 20. You know, it's been a great experience for everybody.
What I know is that this convention has just been growing, and it's really been embraced by the community. This is the second year here in Centennial Hall, the bigger convention center, and it's expanded beyond just the larger space here into additional rooms. What are some new features that you introduced, and what's the response been to those?
We've gotten great response so far. We've doubled our footprint by taking over the entire convention center. We've added a role-playing game area dedicated to teaching new players and exposing experienced people. We've got a local escape game. We've got a local used game store that sells video games, and they're running VR rooms, so we've expanded to even other types of gaming. And then we've also expanded. We've got a local designer here doing demos for us on the fly, so we've really added a lot of features.
Yeah, and you even have a Learn to PlayStation by the Cardboard Herald that is running some videos that you even helped co-write and shoot and assisted with the whole process of that. What was that like to work with such an esteemed and talented individual as, I think his name is Jack Eddy of the Cardboard Herald?
I haven't met anybody by that description, and I would say that mostly I didn't help. I did hinder quite a bit, but it's been great. The Learn to Play videos have been getting very good reception, and I think we want to expand the feature to have extra tables for next year.
Yeah, it has gotten a ton of great response. While I'm talking about this, I should mention that I want to give a big thank you to Floodgate Games, Elzra Games, and then also Ketchup and Stronghold by way of Envoy for supporting this project. But it sounds like we're going to be able to do something really special with that as we grow in the convention in the future. Now, I know that every time that you have a big project like this, and especially from my long-standing relationship and friendship with you, that you get involved to the nth degree in everything that's going on. What were some unforeseen challenges of this particular convention this year, and were there any fixes that you had to do on the fly in order to take care of it?
So many things. Wearing too many hats. Myself, my expertise is in teaching games. I have the experience and the know-how. And then all of a sudden, I find myself leading the entire volunteer staff of 30 or 40 people and needing to be in so many places at one time. I'm going to need to start delegating next year. And then little things like adding these features. Some of them have been way more popular than we thought they'd be. The escape game, overbooked on day one. So having to figure out crowd management is a new problem, and it's a great problem to have, but it's one we're having to figure out this year so that we can do better next year to make sure everyone gets a shot at doing our new features.
I know you've been to a lot of conventions, so I was hoping that you could just speak to the Juno as a community, because we have a very unique population here. And do you think that there's anything unique to holding a convention here that would be of interest to people outside of Alaska who are just looking for cool regional conventions?
You know, one thing that sets our convention apart from some of the ones I've been to is it's not as industry focused. It's we're a community that has terrible weather in the winter. Let's not lie here. January is not the hot spot for Juneau. So what we're looking, we host a local convention for people to get out of their houses in the middle of the winter in Alaska. And so it's very focused on providing a great experience for the attendees. Events, things that we're demoing, things that we're volunteers are staffing. And it's all inclusive with the badge. And so it's a little bit more hands-on than some of the conventions where you wander through an expo hall for hours on end and you're looking at the things, but it's not as, you know, it's more industry-oriented. So here it's definitely more local and friendly. But of course, we're hoping that people want to come visit. There is great scenery. Juneau's not great in January, but it's a gorgeous city no matter what time of year.
Are there any things that you are already thinking about, working the gears in your brain about PlatypusCon 2020 that you'd like people to know?
Absolutely. We're looking to expand our demo program. We want to have more events staffed. We're expanding our role-playing games area because we want to expose people to Dungeons & Dragons, but we also want people who have played role-playing games before to sit down and play Call of Cthulhu or some other Pathfinder, Starfinder. So we're blowing up some of those areas. And we're also always looking to get industry support to try and expose people to the up-and-coming releases. That's our big push, is to see if we can get new features like that.
Well, I really appreciate your time, John, and also yours and PlatypusCon's support in letting the Cardboard Herald be here and do a bunch of coverage of the con. So thank you so much, and good luck with the rest of Sunday.
All right. Thank you, and thanks for being a part of this.
Hey everyone, welcome to more PlatypusCon coverage here on day three. Things are getting wild and crazy, at least with my voice, it is starting to wear out. But I'm so happy that we were able to do some coverage here with local, well, semi-local game designer Michael Dunsmore. Welcome to the con, Michael. How are things going?
Oh, hey, thank you. This is my first time coming to PlatypusCon, and as someone who grew up in Alaska and still spends quite a bit of time here, I was very excited to be able to come to an actual local Alaska State event. And boy, this place surpassed all of my expectations. Just the amount of people and the game library and the friendliness, it's just blew me away so far.
Yeah, this is above and beyond what I think both of us expected out of local Alaska conventions when we were growing up. You grew up in the Anchorage area, right?
I did, yeah. I'm from Anchorage. I grew up in South Anchorage. I went to Stellar there for school. And
go Chugiak Mustangs. So were you a Bosco's rat like I was, hanging out all the time? I guess that would be Bosco's Diamond for you.
Yeah, no, I was definitely big into Bosco's. As a young preteen teenager, I could actually walk to the Spenard store from school. And so often after school, I would just walk over to Bosco's and spend my afternoons there.
Man, that is the best. For those of you who don't know, Bosco's is a veritable institution in Anchorage, and gaming really was the hub of gaming and anime and comic books and sports cards. But we don't really care about those, or at least I don't really care about those right now. So anyway, I wanted to talk to you about this design that you have upcoming. Is this your first release that's going to be published?
Yeah, absolutely. This is. So this is We Need to Talk. It's going to be released from Smirk and Laughter Games. And yeah, this is a co-design with a couple of designer friends of mine. And it is my first product on the market. And I am super excited about it. Yeah.
First game, and you're already with Smirk and Dagger. Well, Smirk and Laughter, which is an imprint of Smirk and Dagger. That's awesome. We've had Kurt on the show before. I really like Kurt. I really like the game company. We're actually having some demos of Tower of Madness over there, so we have other Smirk and Dagger representation. Now, how did you wind up pitching this game to him, or was it something he sought you out for?
No, that's a great question. Actually, once we had the finished prototype and the idea, we specifically wanted to show it to him. He has his product line and his whole business model is really around games that have emotional context to them. And originally that was, you know, the very aggressive take that. And then with the new line, it's a little more open, but it's things that give you a unique emotional feel. And with this game, that's what we thought was different from other party games in the genre is, so we sought him out. In this case, I went to Gen Con and I asked him if I could sit down with his crew and play the game. And we played the game. And then he called me like a week later and was like, hey, can I sign this? So,
if I know anything about game designers from having done this podcast thing for like the last 2 years, it's that every game designer has about a bajillion ideas going on at once. So do you have other things in the works? Are you working on some other designs that you're going to be doing some pitches, or do you actually have some other publishing games on the horizon?
Yes, I'm as you're right. I have plenty of projects in my pocket. I cannot officially announce anything yet, but I should have a Q4 Kickstarter with another publisher at the end of this year. That hasn't been announced yet, so I shouldn't say anything. And then I do have another game that's probably a 2020 release also that's still hush-hush.
Well, that's awesome. Now, this game, we need to talk. I saw this getting played yesterday, and it sounds like you're going to be doing some demos today on it, and people were loving it. It sounds like it has some emotional resonance, but it's also a hilarious game, and probably because of that emotional resonance. But also, like, it is shocking that you guys got the artist behind Dr. Katz, right?
Yeah, so that's full credit to Kurt on that one. We had a conversation about art direction, and he immediately had that idea. And he was like, do you remember Dr. Katz? And we're like, yeah, that would. And he was like, I don't know if I can get them, but I'm going to find out. And yeah, he contacted the animator, and she was really excited. She'd never done a game before. And so we have these wacky quasi-squiggle vision characters to be looking stern at you in all your cards, telling you about the problems you're having, which is pretty cool.
Well, the game looks awesome. Just for the game designers out there in the audience, can you give me just like one little nutshell of a complication, a challenge, something in the design process that you had to overcome as a hurdle, and what the subsequent breakthrough was?
Wow, that is a really good question. I would say the biggest hurdle with this game is the concept of where your friends are going to try to help you with your ridiculous problem was the core gem of the game from the start. And that was, while that's most of the gameplay, that took the least amount of development. The most development time in this game was then, how do you make a scoring mechanism system that gamers are going to want to engage with that incentivizes the behavior you want to see at the tabletop? And we spent a lot of time, my co-designer and myself, Kurt, going through different iterations of how we can get the players to feel the incentives we want them to feeling of like, I want to be helpful, but I don't want to be too blunt. But I also really want you to figure it out. And the other player being like, I really want to figure it out. And that was just took iteration after iteration after iteration. And one of the big breakthroughs, I think, for that was we originally had like a micro list of all the things we think you should get points for in this game, and then figured out that we could combine all of those things into a single token passing mechanic so that we have one pool of tokens and it just gets passed around. And so it kind of organically pays out for all those different things without players knowing they're being paid for those behaviors, which was now pretty much made the final game to be fun and engaging for both intro gamers and hobby gamers. So.
Well, it sounds awesome. I'm so thrilled that I got to meet you at the con. Everyone in the audience, be on the lookout for We Need to Talk by Smirk and Laughter, hopefully Q1 2019 here. Where can people find out more about your stuff, your oeuvre, your whole shtick? Where can people find you, Michael?
Yes. So the best place to find me and where I post about all my game designs, all my prototypes I'm working on, playtesting, is my Twitter. You can find me at Dunsmore Games. And then if you want to get We Need to Talk, it's already up at smirkandlaughter.com, and you can pre-order it now.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for watching our coverage. Thank you so much to PlatypusCon for letting us set up the Cardboard Herald booth here. Hey, everyone. We are here with more PlatypusCon 2019 coverage, and I'm joined by another Jack, Jack Whitley, who is demoing D&D at the con. How's the con going for you, Jack?
The con is fantastic. Platypus Con is the only place where you can both play Dungeons & Dragons, meet new people, and play tag with children all at the same time. It's a wonderful experience.
Yeah, that's very true. It can get a little hectic here, but it looks like everyone is having fun. The con is bigger and better than it's ever been in the past. But this is your first Platypus Con or second?
This is my second Platypus Con. One of the first things I did when I moved into Southeast Alaska was Platypus Con, so it's kind of got a special place in my heart from it. It's bringing me into the Juneau community.
And were you doing anything at the con last year, or is this your first year officially as part of it?
This is my first year as one of the volunteers. Last year, I just was kind of playing the games, hanging out with friends, trying to meet some new people, but it's been truly a great experience being able to work here, and I think I must continue that in the future.
Well, you are a fascinating guy, because I've been talking to you a little bit, and it turns out you're an Eagle Scout. You are a new business operator. You are a former professional beekeeper, and you're a 17-year-old university student. Is there anything else that we can add to this repertoire of various, hobbies, interests, professional development? You know, what else is under your belt here, man?
I'm about to wrap up a professional welding license. I dabbled in blacksmithing, knife making for a while, years of theater, debate, just a bit of everything. Truly a jack of all trades.
I know how that goes as a jack myself. So what was the main challenge that you had in teaching Dungeons & Dragons to people who have never played here before?
I think one of the big issues everybody has when they start teaching people D&D is the prejudices that they bring themselves to the table. Platypus Con is a great place because it has a lot of people, but also you can't say, no, I don't want a 7-year-old kid coming playing D&D at the same table as a 60-year-old individual. So by having these groups of people, you have to tailor your experience to fit both and be entertaining for both people. So as well as the prejudices you bring as a DM, like a younger child's going to be harder to manage, suppressing those because it's often not true. Some of the younger kids have been some of the better role players than a lot of even the more experienced players, but also the prejudices that the other players bring about themselves and mitigating that and truly getting them into the game. Once they're in the game and they're all players, they all are the same, but once it's getting them into that and getting over their personal biases they bring to the table.
What was your introduction to Dungeons & Dragons?
A long time ago, I started with 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons. I played by myself because I couldn't find anyone, so I DM'd and played 3 different characters at the same time, which, while sounds kind of pathetic now, has kind of helped me get into DMing now, playing different characters. When I moved to Juneau, I learned about the wondrous 5th edition that I didn't know existed because I was kind of out of the loop. Got picked up by that, taught by some of my friends, and now I'm the resident DM and haven't gotten to play in a year now.
So when you are a player character, if that's ever allowed to happen, what's your like go-to character archetype?
I'm either a cleric, paladin, or warlock doing something Cthulhu-related just because I'm a big Lovecraft guy. But I'm also looking at that the new Celestial Warlock. Looks pretty cool. So I don't know. I got some options coming forward, too.
So you have other projects going on. Tell me about Firebrand Woodcrafts, because this is really exciting as someone who has witnessed the burgeoning industry of individual custom development of higher-end geeky goods.
Yeah, so Firebrand Woodcrafts is my personal attempt to bring in custom high-quality gaming accessories into the market. A lot of other companies doing it, Warwood Gaming, things like that, are amazing, but they don't bring that custom feel without a $700 price tag, which I think is a little ridiculous. So I bring in my custom woodworking skills, maybe not the top tier, but definitely good enough and pretty high quality in some exotic woods, and I make custom gear for the player, tailored to each player.
And is that only local Alaskans can access that, or is this available to people all over?
I prefer not to ship internationally because that gets a little ridiculous, but Lower 48, if you're willing to pay for shipping, I'll ship it anywhere. Internationally, it's a little bit more, but if you're willing, I'm willing too.
And where can people find that?
We're currently on Facebook as Firebrand Woodcrafts, capital F, capital B. You'd love to send me a message on there. I'd love to get in contact with you. My phone number is also on there. Feel free to give me a call, text me. I'll get back to you shortly.
And is woodcraft something that's come out of your experience as a Boy Scout, or did this come of something other, some other passion in your life?
So not everybody is a beekeeper, but when you start beekeeping, the average beehive is about $200 before you put anything in it, just the frame. And that's ridiculous because they're really just some nice plywood with a little bit of joinery. And so I said, I can figure this out. That's a lie. I figured it out later, but it took me a long time. And so by buying all of the equipment, I had a full wood shop, and it's like, I should kind of figure this out. Took some classes at the college and the university, and now I'm pretty all right at it.
Speaking of which, you know, you're from Texas. What brought you up to Alaska in the first place?
A lot of the same stuff that brings a lot of people here. It's a wonderful place. In the words of Bob Ross, God had a great day when he was making Alaska. And I came up here with my Boy Scout group when I got my Eagle Scout as kind of a congratulations thing. I fell in love with it. Quite literally actually fell off of a glacier in Haines. And I was like, all right, this place tried to kill me. I need to get it back. So I moved up here, got enrolled at University of Alaska Southeast, and kept on rolling from there.
Well, I'm so glad that you were here to teach some Dungeons & Dragons at the convention. I'm looking forward to your partnership with PlatypusCon in the future, and I can't wait to talk to you more about all the projects you got on the horizon. Thanks for coming on the show, Jack.
Hey, thank you very much for your time, guys. Thank you much.
Hey everyone, welcome back to more coverage of PlatypusCon 2019 here in the capital city of Alaska, Juneau, and I'm joined by another Jack, yet another Jack in our coverage, because I think between me and then another person teaching D&D, and yet this Jack Bolin right here, we have three Jacks to talk about. So Jack, why don't you tell me what you're doing here at the con?
So I am running the Dragon Den LLC's business storefront, but besides that, my primary focus is to help people get introduced to Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons, collectible card games, besides those popular ones, and just get introduced to other people in games in Juneau. It's very hard finding a lot of other gamers here.
So the Dragon Den is a new shop that's available, and it's also a space for people to play in, and you guys primarily focus on the collectible games as hobby type of games, like Dungeons & Dragons, Magic the Gathering, or say Warhammer. What seems to be drawing the most interest in your shop?
Primary focus is Warhammer 40K, as well as Fantasy, Age of Sigmar, Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons. I have a few people interested in the niche Wizards of the Coast board games, and focus, at least success for getting people into the store, has been a space that they can play that has multiple rooms, both a public one for major events and a private one for side games.
Now, what was your main inspiration for this? Because I think a lot of people have been clamoring for an inclusive, welcoming environment to play these games, meet new people, and really hang out and experience the nerd culture. Is this something you've always been passionate about, or is this more of a recent thing for you?
I've known a lot of people that have either worked in or worked with game stores throughout the years, and my inspiration for opening it was I finally got tired of taking orders from someone else. I wanted to be my own boss, and at the time it felt right. A lot of things fell into place that normally wouldn't have, and I had the opportunity, so I took it.
Starting a business is hard anywhere in the U.S., or probably anywhere in the world. I can't speak for Dubai, but, you know, I have a little bit of experience with the U.S., and that's especially true in Juneau, Alaska, which has a lot of unique challenges. So how has the business been doing this first year? Because that is often the biggest hurdle for someone to get through, is their first year of business.
I've had a phenomenal first year. One of the hardest things for any new business is having the clientele to come in and patron that business so that you're successful. I spent a lot of years networking through previous jobs, getting to know a lot of the other gamers in town and spreading word about the games that I like to run. A lot of people know me firsthand, but second and third hand isn't uncommon either. And that helped me have a successful game store here in Juneau.
Now, was there anything that you found yourself developing into as a business, as a purveyor of these games that you weren't initially expecting, but it just kind of naturally evolved in this first year? And are there things on the horizon that you're really adamant about working towards that you didn't initially expect to be part of the scope of the Dragon Den?
I think one of the things I didn't expect was to be an auctioneer for people's armies as well as magic cards or other things. The collectible part of it does mean at times people want to get out, and so they'll look to someone like a game store who wants to, and they'll come in so that I can help them sell or at least find someone interested in purchasing whatever they have to sell. I'd like to move into a larger space. That doesn't necessarily mean a larger game space. That could mean an additional side business as part of it, maybe a cafe, a restaurant. Even something simple as burgers and fries can go really well at a game store.
And how about tournament support and getting the support of different publishers out there and even getting interest online from other groups who are just trying to promote tabletop gaming, community stores, events, those types of things? Have you found that you've been able to engage with those official channels?
All of the wholesalers and producers of the games, whether it's Games Workshop, Wizards of the Coast, Privateer Press, everyone has been phenomenal. I remember as a kid hearing stories, horror stories really, from the other store owners about dealing with these people, and it's a complete 180 degree change from what I heard. I'm actually looking to help as my store into other Southeast communities. Now, right now, Sitka just lost their game store. It closed about 6 months ago. Haynes and Skagway don't have one. Ketchikan's got a great one. But as it goes for Hoonah and Pelican even, I actually ship things to all of these Southeast communities. It's not a lot, but I'm looking to help through the larger channels from like Games Workshop and Wizards of the Coast expand things into those communities so at least I can continue to help all of Southeast.
Now, are there any considerations that you think someone out there who might be thinking about their own community's lack of game stores that they're considering maybe starting a game store, something that you would give as advice in the first year that would be kind of broad advice that'll work for anyone regardless of whether it's Alaska or Dubai?
My best advice if someone was looking to start one would be know your network of people within your area. Even though a lot of people know who I am prior to opening up the game store, I've met hundreds of people since doing so that I didn't know were running their own kitchen table games. And those are the people that are going to help bring your store from a good one to a great one. Because when you're bringing the kitchen table games in, everyone's winning and everyone's succeeding.
All right. Well, I am so thankful for you coming onto the show. This is really great. And I'm so glad for everything that you're doing for the community here, helping promote tabletop gaming and giving a lot of access to this awesome, hungry set of people who just want more games to play. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Jack. If people want to learn more about the Dragon Den, where can they go?
They're able to find me on Facebook as an older person who didn't really get into Twitter. I do have one that I'm trying to put more content on there, but the Facebook page, if you search for the Dragon Den LLC or on Google as well, I have a web page there. People are able to find me. It should link to everything as well as a phone number and the location.
Well, look forward to more coverage and more cross support between the Dragon Den and the Cardboard Herald in the future. Thank you to everyone at home for watching, and thank you to PlatypusCon for giving us this environment to have these awesome interviews. Thanks again, Jack.
Jack, thank you.
As always, the Cardboard Herald is a completely free service focused on spotlighting games, gamers, and game creators. You can find all of our podcasts, including the Cardboard Herald and TCBH Reviews, on iTunes, Stitcher, and our website. For more recommendations and reviews, you can also head over to our YouTube channel. We do not pay to advertise the show, so please continue spreading the word, following, liking, rating, and doing all the social media things. It truly does help us out a ton. If you'd like to drop us a line and maybe have your listener mail read on air, find us on Twitter at Cardboard Herald, or send us an email to cardboardherald@gmail.com, or click the contact link on our page. Once again, thank you for listening. I've been Jack for the Cardboard Herald, and you keep on gaming.